cause damage to themselves or to others. And yet, how do you propose to take a drunk that hasn't done anything?
That hasn't done anything?
It hasn't done anything except get drunk.
Okay, if we're picking him up and detoxing him twice a week, he's costing me money.
Yeah, he's costing you money, that's agreed, but what I'm talking about is the criminal act, or a criminal act, to keep him confined. You just, by your own admission, say we can't keep them confined even now when they're picked up driving while intoxicated. Just they get a swinging door. And yet we're trying to figure out some way we can pick them up and throw them in the can for drinking.
I'm not talking about throwing them in cans. I'm talking about a court commitment, involuntary commitment, and get this man right out and get some treatment in for him. These people have been on that avenue for 15 or 20 years.
Yes, sir.
And you know that.
Sure, I know.
And the
I can go down and pick out half of them myself.
That's right. So, you know, this is the thing. When do we, if we're going to have to go to all this expense, and he's become a nuisance to society, you know, he's a nuisance, then we've got to do something. Now, I don't know. We've got to have laws. We've got to have...
This is the public consent that I'm talking about, that I first spoke to Helen about. Perhaps you won't hear it. Can you get the public to respond and support legislation providing for involuntary commitment on drunks? I don't know.
I believe we can. I believe we can let the vote today.
I don't know.
When you told, if you could point out to these people X number of tax dollars over here of what they're costing now and what it would cost with this commitment.
We keep telling them about the capital every day and they don't seem to understand that.
Ma'am, I'm going to hold comments from the others until the committee is finished.
No, what? I'm in agreement. I'm just trying to figure out what kind of a public reception you're going to get.
Well, I believe it would be good. I think that a lot of people are getting tired of being scared to even drive on the road. Those of us that are sober.
Yeah.
And when you really look at how many times people have been in jail with 5 or 6 DWIs, and you really look at the public inebriate down here on 4th Avenue, weekly, monthly, until you know that you can't treat him right here in town. You've got to get something outside of town where you can hold this man and give him some good food. And I don't mean mistreat him. I don't mean jail him. I mean give him treatment. And have something an alternative. It's either that or if he walks off, then jail him. If he wants jail, let's take care of the man. At least he's not laying out here freezing to death, or he's not going to cause somebody else to be dead.
Thank you, Representative Lafitte. All right, ma'am. Mr. Nugent, I believe there was another question.
No, I really didn't have another question. I wanted to say that I agree with him, and I again want to come back to this. I don't think it has to be a criminal law. I think that we're back to the civil proceeding, if possible. Another thing, I think there's a consensus around this table that we know this should happen, and if this many people can't influence and educate people that don't know, then there's something wrong with us.
How many people here have been arrested for drunk while driving? How many of you have been picked up for being inebriated? How many of you have spent a night in jail?
No more.
No, what I mean is, sure, the majority of the people here are all working within a program or programs associated with the problem directly. But you're talking to somebody else when you're talking to the general public, which surprised me when they put the bill through. In fact, I voted against it on the... when they eliminated drunkenness from being a crime, which allowed the situation to get to where it is now. And we had some very liberal people sitting in the legislature at that time, and that's the result. It's like you have a kid right now that doesn't have to tell his parents anything about his medical Anything else? You think that's right?
I can't pass up the opportunity, nor can I resist taking the liberty to comment on that last show of hands. Mr. Porter probably, in his new position, will never spend a night in the jail again anyway. The crux of what I'm wanting to say is there's more than one way to skin a cat, who recently has been promoted so there'll be no more night shift work.
How long ago did we work together, Brian? 14 years? 16 years ago?
14, 15 years ago.
That's when I was head of the ABC board, the state of Washington.
There's usually a source from where all problems stem.
I was not the first chairman.
Ken Hume, or is someone representing Downtown Businessmen's Association? That concludes the names on the list that I have. If there are others here that do not appear on my list, we do have approximately 10 minutes before the noon recess. Does someone else wish to speak? Yes, sir.
All I hear is we seem to want to pass laws to lock these people up.
Sir, would you identify yourself?
Ralph Van Allen. And put this guy in a certain program or something. You know, we got different programs, approaches, and everything else. My approach is aversion therapy. So why don't we set up a hospital? So it's a volunteer. You get this guy that goes out on Saturday night, gets drunk. The next morning he's hungover. Make it a voluntary, so the state's paying for it. We're talking $17 million it's costing us taxpayers. For $2,000, you can cure that man. And then you can get him into AA and these other programs, and he will stay cured. You're going to have to make a program where when he's hungover, that's when he wants help. And he will seek help if he can get it without being condemned the rest of his life. And I'm sure you're going to find people that we go through the program that when you start threatening him, you're going to lock him up and make him go to this. And if he misses one meeting, then he gets stuck in jail for a week or something like that. Nobody's going to go for that.
How do you protect the person?
I said it'd be voluntary. The guy, if he is drunk and he's hungover, before he gets that next drink, if he can pick up that phone and call and say, hey, admit me, he's going to go. But if he gets that first drink, he's going to say, no, I don't want to drink. I don't want to be cured. I don't want any help. I don't need the help. I've had my drink today.
Maybe you know that cure that way.
Voluntary? Myself.
Okay. Additional comments?
I know a lot of people are closet drunks that just said, hey, I can't handle something. Just quit flat.
Right.
He's got the more than a kernel of truth in what he's saying. You're not going to force people to become sober.
That's what he's saying. When he's hungover and sick,
you know that yourself.
That's when he wants to help.
You have to motivate yourself to do it. How did you get out? One day you looked in the mirror and said, "My God, is that me?"
That's a lot of story.
Okay, any additional comments on Chris?
I think that's something to answer.
Chris?
I just wanted to ask Helen about his recently about this new from the hospital.
Yes, I've heard of it. We had a group of people come to me from the university about 3 years ago from that hospital that put on a workshop. Apparently, we have a good track record.
This kind of program is not for some of the things that we're still here to talk about.
It incorporates several things. It incorporates AA treatment. I don't know if it's a voluntary commitment. Usually people go there voluntarily. I would like to comment on something. The gentleman here said, we do have state-supported facilities where people can go voluntarily. We're putting a great deal of money into the program, as a matter of fact. So they are there.
Who gets the help from those programs?
Whoever asks for it.
I think what we're going to have to do, you know, is I picture the alcoholism program in Alaska is more or less a big funnel like this. And you have all these people swimming around here telling everybody what to do and justifying their own existence in the program. And it gets smaller and smaller, and by the time it gets down here, there's very little comes out of the end of that funnel. And if you just somehow manage to turn that around so it's a bigger base that goes out to the public treatment and a smaller base is with the thinkers, then I think we'd improve everything. Other than that, I don't have too much to say.
Anyone else wish to comment?
I think one of the problems in developing legislation of this kind is that you have to have a pretty clear, concise definition of the kind of population you're looking for. If you just make it drunkenness, then obviously the public is going to get pretty excited about the trampling on of their civil rights. If you have a pretty clear definition of what population you're talking about, the chronic alcoholic, who are, again, as I say, pretty measurable, then I think you have a pretty good chance of public support.
But how do you measure them if it's not a crime and there isn't any public records to be kept on admissions or release, then there's no public,
but
for all intents and purposes, there's nothing public.
But it is an illness, and it is a definable illness that has
well, it gets to that extent, the illness.
Yeah.
It gets to that extent.
Yeah. And I think you can...
Questionable whether it's an illness or not.
But I think there are pretty specific criteria that you can look for. And if you build these into the law, I think you can get public support for it.
If you go along with what Ed says, and with some people, and if you write it into the law, a person has been picked up in a certain length of by emergency medical treatment or has been brought into protective custody so many times within a certain period of time, that's who you're talking about, then he goes.
That's only one measurable aspect of it.
That's right. I understand what you're saying, but I think that's about the approach you're going to have to take. Mm-hmm. You're not going to be able to throw just a catch-all, and that's when you're going to have the problems with the civil rights groups and anybody that feels like it. And then they're the ones that are going to come down there and start beating on the doors.
Right.
Some of us just have to be a little bit more hard-headed and say, too bad.
Brian, the people who come in actually with DWIs, they actually are given sentence. They become a court-related case, if that's a good point, don't they? Now, we'll see in the paper where it's a 30-day sentence or 30-day suspended. Of course, we know some of them have good attorneys, but is there the possibility that many of them are not being sentenced because there is no place to hold them? You can't afford to take them to cell for a good citizen who happens to be an alcoholic and is irresponsible and driving, drinking. If you had a place with less security, do you think a number of these people would stay there? They would take their week sentence, whatever it is, and take a forced education program with them.
Good citizens. The kinds of people that we're talking about are the kinds of people that we ran the prison farms with the last 20 years that I know of. We had probably a better escape ratio from a totally open prison farm in McNeil Island.
I guess what I'm thinking about is that we have many of these people again who are, they have jobs, they have homes. They're probably people who certainly don't want to go in jail for 3 or 4 days because of their reputation, because of other things. If there was a place where they could serve their sentence, which would not have to be maximum security, you feel that a number of them would stay there and serve a 5-day sentence, take a course in the prison program, and it might possibly do some benefit to keep them from their irresponsible driving habits again.
Let me admit, first, to being a total fundamentalist and still believing that there's some effect from deterrence, we know the kind of person that is going to receive a short sentence, I think it ought to be as exemplary as possible, something that he wouldn't want to repeat. So I would rather he do that in jail. If you're going to have a treatment program, then create an environment that's facilitate treatment. If you're going to punish, punish. If you're going to treat, treat. Don't treat in jail. Don't punish and treat.
Yeah. Good.
Well, then when I was up here 2 weeks ago, I made a tour of the 60 dynamics over there, and I took the rated capacity there, and then given away that piece was going to 96 occupancy. And the day I was there, it was 2 o'clock in the afternoon, they had 148 people. And that's why I asked some of you if you'd ever spend a night in jail. You might try it sometime and see how it is. If good citizens don't want to go back to jail, I guarantee you that. Well, he doesn't mind that you're going to wash him up and press his suit and give him a couple of meals and put him on his feet again. He don't mind that at all. He'd take that if that's really good or sit there and look at it and say, oh yeah, I'm telling him all this stuff in and go out and do the same thing again. All you got is just a dry out center for some people. That's what the majority of the alcoholism program in Alaska are now, just dry out places for people.
Mr. Coyle, would you like a couple of minutes?
I don't think so. I've got a whole list of notes that I've taken up that's involved in various things, and I'd like to see if I can make a lot of what I do.
Thank you. I'd like to ask the staff, is there any need for the 1 o'clock continuance?
No, not to be finished yet.
If not, then I wish to thank all of you for taking your time and sharing your views with us. And hopefully there'll be many of you in the coming weeks, and especially on October 19th, the public hearing in the city of Anchorage. The committee leaves this afternoon for less than the last.
Some of the committee meetings for us.
I might take just 1 minute to explain some of the controversy that may have arisen over the committee's activities. I did speak with the governor in regards to a press release on
the lack of
publicity regarding our activities, and
due to
total ignorance, and I'm
forced to
believe him. I think it was a breakdown in communication, which is the problem
we're talking about.
But nonetheless,
the last
monies that we do expend, and the committee considered it in their wisdom that it makes sense in advertising
in the metropolitan areas,
our western
way.
But we did notify, and I'm
hopeful that we'll have
exceptional input from Western Alaska. We mailed out some 850 personal letters, and
we made
over
50 personal
telephone calls to individuals who are concerned
with this
problem. We have spots running on 10 radios with
the message being
transferred in the Yupik language.
So
I don't know why the governor says it isn't publicized.
He's correct, but it's not
being publicized in Anchorage. It's not time
for him to
hear. So the committee is working. That's what I wish to
leave with it.
Again, thank you all for coming.
We'll see you later.
Can I just enlighten I talked to the governor yesterday on the same matter, and he responded in the fact that he had been acquainted by some of the legislators that their people in their villages had not been apprised of the meetings. And simply because those villages were not on the agenda, I suppose, although people from those villages were invited to participate in the hearings that were being held. And while being totally ignorant on it, that and a variety of other subjects, we did apologize, more or less, to the committee and specifically to the chairman.
Good, thank you.